The slide number 19 shows the history that brought the ARM processor to become, from the beginning, one of the most diffused and popular embedded microprocessor in the market for industrial applications. Born in Acorn in 1983, after the success of another microprocessor called BBC Micro, the ARM processor was developed as a, let's say, special purpose microprocessor implementing the early concepts of RISC architectures. And that was due to the fact that Acorn, at the epoch, was a really smaller company than most of the other USA competitors. So it was not possible for them to develop a general purpose, large market diffused microsystem. Therefore, the main ideas were oriented toward the low cost and the low power consumption characteristics, and that was the processor named ARM1, used only internally. On 1987, the first ARM Archimedes platform was released with a 8 MHz working frequency that was called ARM2. And then the appreciable success that this architecture had on the market attracted the attention of one big company, the VLSI Technology Incorporation, that tried to establish a collaboration with Acorn in design and development of new versions of ARM, so as to bias part of the market towards the use of such a kind of processors. This policy brought in 1989 to develop a third version of ARM, with more cache and bigger working frequency, and in 1990 ARM became part of VLSI and Apple. The following success that brought this kind of processor to be used by several other companies made it basically a popular worldwide standard. So as at now, ARM is a community to which the main microprocessor design brands decide to belong, and the ARM acronym evolved in the more general advanced RISC machine. We will see the ARM instruction set, in particular a specific version, the programming model, the memory organization, the data operations, and the flow of control. ARM architecture has been extended over several versions. We will concentrate on ARM 7, that is a von Neumann architecture based, while ARM 9 is a hardware that is characterized by a lot of licenses. It features good computational performance, low cost and low power consumption, and a few interesting extensions, like for example Jazel, that is a software technology used to execute Java bytecode on such a kind of processor that corresponds to a multitasking Java virtual machine. The ARM 7 family on which we will focus our attention is, as we said, a von Neumann architecture. Instead, for example, the ARM 9 is a hardware architecture. A von Neumann architecture is characterized by the fact that memory holds data together instructions, or as well we could say that instructions are managed as they were data. A central processing unit fetches the instructions from the memory, and Some registers are available to the elaborations of these instructions, like the program counter that points the next instruction to be executed, the instruction register that contains the instruction at present executed, some other general purpose register, etc. Slide number 23 shows how a CPU von Neumann works. We see that in the blue square we have the CPU with its own registers, in particular the program counter and the instruction register. For example, the program counter contains the address 200, so this address is pointed by the CPU and will return the instruction that is shown in the picture, add R1 plus R3 with the result that is put in R5, and that instruction will be contained into the instruction register. Conversely, a hardware architecture features two separate memories, one devoted to the data that must be processed and one devoted to the instructions that must process them. You see that we have two separate buses that connect the CPU to the data memory and the program memory. And this shows one of the main advantages of the hardware architecture, that is a separate, independent and parallel access to the instructions and to the relative data on which those instructions must work. Clearly, this characteristic is very useful in case of signal processing, filtering, into which basically we have to execute sums and multiplications on a large set of data that have been acquired through sensors or other measurement devices. Main, on the other hand, drawback of hardware architecture is the not possibility to use a self-modifying code. So, DSPs are typically hardware-based due to the greater memory bandwidth and the more predictable bandwidth with which streaming data can be acquired. But, for example, the code that is shown in slide 26 cannot be executed on a DSP or, generally speaking, on a hardware architecture. Let's take a look to the details of such a kind of code that performs a variable shift left logical of the content of the register S1. The number of the positions that register must be shifted is contained in the register S2, and the result will be written in register S0. So the first instruction load into the register T0 a mask that is written into the comment of the code FFFF F83F in hexadecimal code. Notice that 83 corresponds to 1000011. That is a group of 6 bits is set to 0, while the other ones are all 1. The next instruction that loads shifter in the register S1 is related to the fact that the shifter is a address, a specific address. The address of the last instruction, the label at which the shift left logical $S0, $S1, $0 is executed, is written and therefore is executed. This can appear a contradiction, but at the end of the code we will understand that the amount of the shift performed by that instruction is not zero, but instead is the amount that we have found in the register as 2. And now let's understand how to modify this instruction. First of all, we have a load word of the content of the memory location S1 in S0. We have just now said that S1 contains a shifter, therefore shifter contains in turn the object code of the instruction shift left logical. So in S0 we will have the bits representing the instruction that must be executed. Successively, we have an AND instruction by which we perform a logical AND between T0, the mask that we have defined just before, and the register S0, that is the instruction we have detected and defined. This AND will preserve all those bits that are ended with 1, while it will clear those bits that correspond to the 0 position in the mask. If we look at the format, if we look at the format of the instruction, we will see that those bits correspond to the R format, in arithmetic R format of the MIPS processor, and in particular to the field that is typically devoted to the identification of the shift amount if a shift instruction is executed. So everything that in the instruction is expressed, now it is set to 0. Therefore, the next instruction AND E $2, $2, $1F will end with a set of 5 ones, the content of the register S2, because that register contains a number that expresses the number of the position we have to shift, but clearly that number must be compliant with the correspondent field in the R format of the instruction we are modifying, and we remember that that field is made off by 5 bits. The successive instruction shifts the content of S2 6 position left so as to align the position of the number S2, number originally contained in S2, in the right position to be overwritten in the instruction that we are modifying. In fact, the next instruction is an OR that add the content of S0, that is the instruction, plus S2, that is the number of position we wanted to shift the register that will be the argument in the final shift left instruction with this number that is perfectly aligned with the position that the shift has in the format of the instruction in the MIPS processor instruction set. And finally, we have a store word of the new content of S0, that is the original one modified with S2, in the same memory location, S1, that is in the shifter location. So, since the shifter location contains the shift left logical, basically it will execute the same procedure, but instead of having that 0 as the amount of the number of the position we have to shift, now that value will be replaced with the content of S2. Therefore, the variable shift has been implemented. Such a kind of code can be executed only in a von Neumann architecture, only on in a von Neumann processor, because if we consider the Harvard architectures, for example, characterizing the digital signal processors, we have said that the memories are separated, that is, we can make access to data memory, or we can make access to instruction memory, and the two accesses are made in parallel. This kind of code manages instructions as they are data. And since in that kind of architectures the two memories are kept separate and accessed in parallel, clearly such a kind of modification cannot be performed. The slide 27 shows how the ARM family basically joins many aspects typical of RISC-style processors with others that instead are typical of CISC processors. For example, in RISC processors, just to make the access to the memory more standard and faster than with instruction variable length, the dimension of the instruction typically is fixed and typically is 32 bits. Another issue that is peculiar in RISC architecture is the so-called load store instructions to perform memory access. That is, typical memory accesses are made through the presence of registers, and no from memory access, better from a memory location to another memory location, because this wouldn't be compliant in any case with fixed instruction length. Another typical issue in RISC processors is that all the arithmetic and logic operations are typically executed directly onto the chip of the processor, that is, onto the registers, just to allow a faster execution of them. Conversely, ARM proposes to the programmer also some issues that are instead peculiar of CISC processors, like the auto increment and decrement of registers, and the addressing relative to the program counter, so as to jump to whatever location simply by adding a suitable offset that is inside the instruction and that is added to the program counter. Moreover, typical in CISC processors are the flags for branching and conditional execution of the instructions. We will see that, like in the Intel processors, also in this case we will have a specific register whose bits are flags for several possible conditions that can occur. Moreover, we have multi-registers load store in a unique instruction to facilitate the contemporaneous access to several data, typically organized in arrays, and this is, let's say, heritage of the cultural orientation of such a kind of processor toward the signal processing. A very unusual aspect instead that is introduced with the ARM family is the conditional execution of the instructions, that is a prefix in the instruction will determine the execution of the instruction itself, considering the occurrence of a certain condition or not. And this is solved at the level of the codification of the operating code together with the check of the corresponding flag, without executing tests, comparison, or other types of verifications that require more instructions, like in the other typical processors that we can consider. In the slide 28, a few instructions of the ARM assembly language are proposed just to start. They are fairly standard assembly instructions. The first is a load that stores into a register called R0 the content of the memory location whose address is kept in the register R8. The second, with a label, that is the alphanumeric address written into the code, is a sum of two registers, R0 and R1, whose result is written in the register R4. ARM is a typical load store architecture, that is, no direct operands are in memory, but all the operations are executed on data that are transferred from the memory to registers and vice versa, but the operations are executed onto the registers. These registers are 37, 31 general purpose, and 6 devoted to specific tasks, let's say. The ARM can work in 7 different status or 7 different program modes that are called used, supervisor, abort, undefined, interrupt, fast interrupt, and system. Instruction execute on data types that can be bytes, half word, and word, and the version that we take into consideration, ARM7, features a three-stage pipeline. In slide 29, more details about the 7 modes that characterize the ARM programming are shown. In particular, we have a table into which we see some descriptions about the 7 processor modes. User is the common mode for executing the program. FIQ and IRQ are 2 modes that are devoted to the interrupt management, but in the first one, fast interrupt, the management is, let's say, lightened with some steps that instead are executed into the IRQ, so as to make such a kind of management faster with respect, in particular, the other one. Supervisor is the mode into which code or functions relative to the operating system, like for example the access to the video, to the keyboard, to the peripherals of the processor, are executed, and clearly are executed in atomic way, so as to allow to only one task per time to make access to those, let's say, precious and privileged resources. Abort is the status into which the processor goes when memory access that is forbidden is executed, and this situation is considered an error. Undefined is, let's say, theoretical status that is activated when the processor tries to execute an instruction that doesn't belong to the set of those that the processor recognizes. And finally, system is a privileged mode that is different from the user mode that allows the execution of a task of the operating system. Every mode is qualified by suitable codification, and what distinguish those modes are the last four bits as shown in the table. Just to be a little bit more precise, we can specify that if the supervisor mode is a protected mode into which the execution is left, let's say, a superior entity that manages the request of the ARM task and executes it by making usage of a suitable shared resource or a suitable peripheral, but without giving the access physically to the ARM task, to the user task. On the contrary, a system mode is a system into which the task is executed at the user mode by the ARM processor requires the elaboration of a specific mechanism to which is given an access without any limitation. So the system is the procedure that at the level of the operating system make access and make usage of that specific resource, but without call a superior entity and remaining after, let's say, the moment into which the system executes that particular job at the level of the user task processed by the CPU. Slide 31 shows a general description of the registers available in the ARM architecture, and let's say a more complete explanation is provided into the successive slide, where we see that for every of the 16 available registers, an explanation is given. R15 is the program counter, R14 is the link register into which the return address when a subroutine is called must be stored, so as during the return from the subroutine it is possible to come back in the right position in the main program that called the subroutine. Clearly, this register is useless if we will execute nested subroutines, but we will see that in that case it will be necessary to employ the stack area, and for this reason we have the R14 register that is the stack pointer. R12 is the IP register, called also inter-procedure, called scratch register, while R11, R10, R8, R7, R6, R5 and R4 are registers typically used to store variables that are defined in the program. This doesn't mean that only 8 variables can be defined, of course, but typically in the style of programming ARM processors, those are the registers devoted by convention to such a kind of variables. Conversely, we have 4 registers that are R0, R1, R2, R3 that in the convention of programming model ARM processors are typically used for the parameter passing when a subroutine is called without using the stack area. In the slide number 33, we have a table that shows the situation about the registers, considering the seven possible modes into which the processor can be found. User, supervisor, abort, undefined, interrupt, and fast interrupt. From this table, we see that the registers R0, R1, R2, R3, R4, R5, R6, and R7 correspond always to the same physical memory locations for all the modes into which the processor can be. Conversely, looking at the registers R8, R9, R10, 11, 12, 13, and 14, the situation is a little bit different, since R8, R9, R10, R11, and R12 are shared among all the modes except the fast interrupt that is equipped with its own specific registers. The situation, or better, this kind of architectural choice is repeated in a wider way when we consider the link register and the stack pointer. In this case, I mean R13 and R14, we have a specific register for each one of the modes into which the processor can be. That is, we have a R14 and R14 for the user mode, another couple for the supervisor SVC mode, another couple for the abort ABT mode, another for the undefined, another for the interrupt managed in the fast way and in the normal way. Conversely, the program counter is always the same. In the table, you see also another acronym that corresponds to another register. This register is the CPSR, the Current Program Status Register. This register contains all the flags that are activated when specific situations occur and are checked when the conditional execution of the instruction must be verified. The same current program status register is shared among the different programming modes, but in every mode we have a temporary register into which the CPSR register of the mode from which the processor is coming before entering into the present one is saved. This, of course, to execute the so-called context switch, that is to preserve the snapshot of the flags and of the status of the execution of the processor before entering into the new mode. So you see that the supervisor mode features an SPSR, that is saved program status register for its own mode SVC. The same in the case of the abort or the undefined or the interrupt or the fast interrupt mode.
In the slide 34, we have the current program status register together with all those bits that are important to condition the execution of the instructions. The most significant ones are the bits related to the negative result, the zero, the carry set, and the overflow in case of signed operation conditions. That is when an arithmetic operation or sometimes a logic operation and often comparisons generates those conditions, the relative flag in the current program status register will be set to 1. This is important because it allows the execution of other instructions under condition, that is, under the verification of the occurrence of a certain fact, of a certain condition that can be verified by testing the corresponding bit in such a kind of register. Conversely, we have other three bits that instead indicate a particular condition in the working activity of the processor, such as the bit I that indicates if generic interrupt management is disabled, F, the same thing but for the fast interrupt management, or T, that says if the processor is working in 16-bit instruction set, that is in reduced mode or thumb reduced mode, just to limit the power consumption, but also if possible to speed up the execution of certain instructions. Finally, the least significant bit basically express the codification of the particular mode into which the processor is working, and corresponds to the table that has been shown in slide 29. In slide 35, we have some comments that are related to the set of the flags in the current program status register, because apart the comparison between the registers, typically data process don't affect the condition flags if a specific postfix is not applied to them. This postfix is an S. In other words, if we execute add R0, R1, R2, we simply add two registers and we put the result in another one. Instead, if we add the S, if we execute add S, R0, R1, R2, we will make the same operation, but we will set the flags in case the corresponding condition is verified. Every logical, arithmetical, or shifting operation can set the CPSR bits. For example, if we add 1 to minus 1, we will have to set the 0 flag and the carry flag, because clearly the result will be 0, but clearly we will have a carry bit after that sum. Conversely, if we perform 2 power 31 minus 1 plus 1, the result is minus 2 power 31. And in this case, we will have to set the negative flag and the overflow flag as a consequence of such a kind of operation. In slide 36, we have an important issue that is related to an instruction format of all the instructions and concerns the most significant bits. From the bit 31 to the bit 28, we have the possibility to codify the occurrence of a certain condition under which the instruction described by the following operating code will be executed. In other words, we can think to execute a add operation, but if this add operation is executed only if the result of a previous comparison was 0, we should add a postfix that corresponds to the codification 0000 in the format of the instruction itself. I said that we should add, but clearly this is not a task of the programmer. Conversely, it is only necessary to write add EQ as the type of the new instruction that must be executed, and the compiler will translate such an expression, such a syntax, in the correct codification of the bits in the condition field that is shown into the slide. Be careful, because the table that is shown in such a slide is not corresponding to the flags that we have just now described. In other words, what we are saying is that this is an ordered number sequence that distinguishes the equality condition from the not equality, from let's say the negative occurrence of a previously calculated result, and the occurrence of the overflow, etc. But for example, if the overflow is codified by 0110, this has nothing to do with the bits N, C, Z, V in the current program status register. In other words, such a kind of sequence of bits doesn't not correspond to the flags of the current program status register itself. Words in ARM are 32 bits long and can be divided into 4 8-bit bytes. Also, addresses are 32 bits long. An address, however, refers to a single byte. For example, address 4 starts at the byte number 4. ARM can be configured at power-up as working either in little or in bit endian mode, as shown in the slide 38. Just the case to remember that in little endian the sequence of the bytes that characterize a word is byte 3, byte 2, byte 1 and byte 0, starting from the most significant bit, and towards the least significant bit. Conversely, in big endian mode, the sequence will be byte 0, byte 1, byte 2, and byte 3. And as I said, this is configurable. Let's consider the data instructions in ARM. In the slide 39, we have the first and most elementary type of sum, add R0, R1, R2, that computes R1 plus 2 plus R2 and stores the result in R0. We can have also one of the operands as an immediate value, like shown in the slide, add R0, R1, number 2, computes R1 plus 2, again storing the result in R0. Slide 30 lists set, not exhaustive, but quite complete, of the ARM data instructions: add or add with carry, subtract or subtract with carry, reverse subtract with and without carry, multiply and accumulate, or simply multiply two operands, logic functions as AND, OR, and XOR, bit clear, just to reset the bits of a register, logical shift left and right, arithmetic shift left and right, rotate right the content of a register, rotate right extended with the carry flag. We will see the meaning of these instructions, but only a first comment about the presence of the reverse subtract that is due to the particular format assumed by the data operations in ARM. Otherwise, one could think that to perform a reverse subtraction, it is only necessary to exchange the operands and that's it. But this is not possible due to the format of these instructions, and we will see the reason why. We have also logical shift, we said, and arithmetic shift. Just a case to remember that in the first case, those bits that must be filled due to the movement, due to the shifting operation, will be filled with zeros. Instead, in the case of the arithmetic shift, they will be shift depending in the position, but at the beginning of the word they will be filled respecting the value of the least significant bit that is shifting. Instead, if we consider the most significant ones, they will be filled respecting the sign of the word that we are considering. RRX performs a rotation involving 33 bits and includes the carry flag from the current program status register bit as the sign bit, as the most significant bit. Slide 32 shows the data processing instruction format and deserves some comments and some remarks. First of all, we see the most significant bits that represent the condition field, so the codification of the condition under which eventually the instruction must or can be executed. The successive couple of bits represent the codification, the opcode, let's say, of the data format instructions. I, the bit 25, indicates if an immediate operand will be present or not in the next bits, in the operands in particular. The opcode indicates what kind of data processing instruction we are executed, and in the list we have a correspondence between the syntax of the instruction and the relative codification that is included into the opcode field. S is a flag and says if that particular, let's say, arithmetic, for example, instruction must be considered normal or with the postfix S that is will affect or not the flex in the current program status register. Rn is the codification of the first operand, and we see that is represented by 5 bits. That is, this is the codification of a register. RD is the destination register, again represented by 5 bits. Just a case to remember that the registers in ARM are 32. And finally, we have 12 bits that are devoted to the second operand on which the data processing instruction operates. Here we have two options. In the first one, the 12 bits are divided into a first field that represent an eventual operation of shift that can be applied onto the register itself. And the last five bits will indicate another register that contains the second operand. A second option instead foresees the presence of an immediate value that will be written in the last 8 bits, typically it's an unsigned 8-bit immediate value, together with possible shift or rotate operation that can be applied to such a kind of an immediate operand, and whose amount is shown in the four, let's say, most significant bits of this field, from 11 to 8. And we said that the choice between these two options, immediate or not immediate, is expressed by the bit 25, that is I.